time for the Vintage Truth Podcast with best-selling author and Bible teacher, Jeff Kinley.
Hey, welcome to the Vintage Truth Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Hey, we're talking about a very important subject, very culturally relevant in our world today, talking about abortion. And you know what? We should not get tired of talking about this subject because it's not going away. It happens every day. And, you know, it's, can you imagine being a person, just a normal person growing up in Holland or in Germany or somewhere, and you're a believer in Jesus, and yet you see smoke rising from these chimneys every day. You know that they're in there burning Jews and killing people, and knowing that you are in some ways helpless to prevent that. You know, this idea of abortion is very macabre and ironic, because you think about this, the female womb is brilliantly designed by the Creator to nourish and shelter the developing baby. And yet it's been transformed in our world into an optional death chamber, effectually making a mother's body no different than the gas chambers and crematoriums used in such places as Auschwitz and Dachau. How sad that a baby should get a funeral before he or she gets a birthday. Wow. So if you still think abortion is only about politics or women's rights or healthcare, then you have succumbed to the conforming pressure of a world gone mad. You've been brainwashed. Actually, brain dirtied is what you've fallen into. Abortion is first and foremost not a healthcare issue, not a woman's issue, not a medical issue, not a rights issue. It is a spiritual and moral issue. That's where it begins. We've sanitized it by making it into these other things, these political footballs. But unless you address abortion and call it for what it really is, then you're going to miss it. You'll never understand it unless you call it for what it is, a spiritual and moral issue. It's a blight on our culture and on our world. Now, murdering the unborn is nothing new, okay? Democrats didn't invent abortion. Feminists did not invent abortion. I mean, they're playing into something that was invented a long, long time ago. In fact, the earliest known record of abortions is found in the Ebers Papyrus. That's about 1550 BC. And this Ebers Papyrus was an ancient Egyptian medical document. And it was written there that you could abort a child by inducing a plant fiber sort of tampon covered with honey and crushed dates. It created this mixture. Subsequently, other herbal abortion-inducing drugs were used, including silphium, which is a popular medicinal plant of the ancient world. It's now extinct, by the way. And something called pennyroyal, which is a toxic species of mint used to cause uterine contractions. See, when a baby is unwanted, if you don't want it, instead of being influenced by a higher moral code, the only moral code you have is what you want, your own rotten, depraved, selfish, expedient heart. That's all you have. But it goes all the way back to the ancient Egyptians. Now, the Chinese used mercury to induce abortions. The killing of preborn babies was also commonplace in the Roman Empire. So was infanticide, by the way, for any child under 3 years old. Even so, infanticide became a fairly common practice in which one Roman philosopher, Seneca, who was a statesman and advisor to Nero, compared unnatural progeny to the killing of mad dogs or savage ox or a sickly sheep. In other words, if something is unnatural or is deformed or you don't like it or whatever, kill it. And he even allowed for the drowning of children who at birth are weakly or abnormal. Pliny the Elder, writing in the first century, wrote that, quote, "Man is the only animal that repents of his first embraces," end quote. So what does that mean? means man is the only animal that is sorry that he had sexual relations and produced a child and then goes and kills the child. How odd that of all the creation, the most intelligent species on earth would regret the creation of life. And in an attempt to justify today's practices, abortion rights activists claim over several centuries and in different cultures, there is a rich history of women helping one another to abort. A history, perhaps, but not a rich one. In 1921, a large cemetery of sacrificed infants was discovered at Carthage, an ancient city. Hundreds of burial urns containing cremated infant bones, mostly newborns, were uncovered in this cemetery. A practice that is believed to have originated in Phoenicia, child sacrifice was fairly common in biblical times. So it's not something new. But found on these particular burial monuments were the names and symbols of the goddess Tanit, who was the chief Phoenician female deity, and her spouse Baal Hamon. And the burial inscriptions read after they aborted these babies and killed them at birth, it says, quote, "To Our Lady, to Tanit, the face of Baal, and to our Lord, to Baal Hamon," end quote. Tanit was considered the mother goddess who was invoked for blessings of fertility. Oh, the irony of that. Plutarch wrote that the area immediately surrounding the statue of Tanit was filled with flute players and individuals beating drums. Well, wait a minute. Well, why would this altar be surrounded with flute players and people beating drums? He says they were placed there to prevent children's horror-filled cries from being heard by the general public while they were slaughtered. What if we could hear that baby screaming in the womb while those abortion procedures are going on? And then we broadcast that. No, we could get them in a private room where no one can hear. Up to 20,000 of these burial urns have been uncovered at Carthage, but that's nothing compared to how we appease the female deity today. We confer godlike status upon women. My friend, I don't care who you are. I don't care who you think you are. You are not a god, and you do not have the right to murder your own flesh and blood. Ancient Israel was repeatedly warned by God not to adopt the despicable practices of the Canaanites who were doing these things. God told them before they entered the promised land, don't assimilate Canaanite culture into your own and imitate their demonic and barbaric practices. But they refused to heed these warnings, and the Lord eventually brought judgment on them. One of those Canaanite gods was a god called Molech. You can read about him in 1 Kings chapter 11. He's portrayed sort of as a half-man, half-bull kind of creature. 400 years after entering the promised land, Solomon would pay homage to this god because his heart had been turned away from his own god by his pagan wives. For this idolatrous worship, his kingdom was torn from him. And the high place Solomon built for Molech was located on what would later become known as the Mount of Olives. It's very sad. As God's prior instruction to Israel regarding these very pagan practices had been clear and direct, listen to what Leviticus 18:21 says. Do not give any of your children to be sacrificed to Molech, for you must not profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You see, to destroy that innocent life is to profane the name of God. It goes on to say in Leviticus 20, any Israelite or foreigner residing in Israel who sacrifices any of his children to Molech shall be put to death. God says, I'll set my own face against them. So clearly, sacrificing your children to a demon god was considered evil by Yahweh. And the judgment administered for such practice was stoning. Generations passed following the conquest long after Solomon's reign, and the people were still succumbing to these pagan practices. God said the place where these detestable sacrifices were carried out would one day be called the Valley of Slaughter. It is because of this and other sins that the Lord came to describe Judah as, quote, a nation that did not obey the voice of the Lord their God or accept correction. He says, truth has perished and been cut off from their mouth. End quote. That's Jeremiah 7:28. following the Babylonian captivity, this Valley of Hinnom, which is the Greek word Gehenna, and Jesus' day became a place for burning garbage and the bodies of executed criminals. I mean, there's such a horrible history about this. These were abominable sins. In fact, in Leviticus 18, he talks about sins that bring divine judgment. He lists them. He says incest, adultery, child sacrifice, homosexuality, and bestiality. Specifically, he mentions those things. He says these are the things that defile a person, and that this is what defiles the land and brings judgment. As with the sins of the Amorites, fullness of sin brings fullness of wrath. So here's the question. Are there any appropriate parallels between ancient Canaanite practices, the people of Israel, child sacrifice, and us? Let me give you a couple things to think about. Number one, with the taking of the life of a child, whether in the womb or outside of the womb, we've committed murder. Unless this truth is acknowledged and accepted, nothing about abortion will ever make sense from a moral standpoint. Okay? If there's no God, then abortion is neither right nor wrong. Because without a moral lawgiver, there cannot be any absolute morality attached to this act. It's just something we do as humans. It's a thing we do. And if you listen to some abortion activists, they speak this way. It's like taking a wart off. It's like getting a bunion cut off or, you know, a small tumor taken out. However, the God of Scripture happens to exist, and there is a mandate against abortion. Thousands of years ago, the Canaanites sacrificed newborn infants before Molech, while today we sacrifice preborn infants in abortion clinics and hospitals. Both are brutal executions. One satisfies the demands of a demon god, while the other appeases the desires of a would-be mother. Second, God does not allow nations who practice such atrocities to escape the inevitable consequences of judgment. Oops. Collectively, these nations receive divine retribution, either by conquest, collapsing from within, or through experiencing some form of supernatural visitation and judgment. And no matter how great you think America once was or is trying to be again, you don't get a pass on this one. God is not going to look the other way because of what we've done to the unborn. Third, as a nation, Israel was in a special covenantal relationship with God. As such, she and her leaders were responsible to follow his ways and avoid the customs and morals of the pagan nations who dwelled nearby. And though I see a clear distinction between national Israel and the church, Christians nevertheless are called to the same principle of moral separation. We are not to remove ourselves from our culture, but are rather called to avoid being influenced by certain ungodly values and cultural practices. So, in other words, a professing believer in Jesus doesn't even have to think twice regarding the immorality of abortion. And the fact that some do is an indication that worldly thinking has embedded itself in their minds, and it could be an indication of something even worse, i.e., they don't know Jesus yet. Now, if we fast forward into the first century, human sacrifice was rare in Rome, but abortion was still practiced. And you know, the early church fathers addressed this subject in the Didache, which is a compilation of the 12 apostles' teaching about AD 150. Among the commands about practicing magic, don't practice magic, don't use potions, don't commit fornication, don't commit adultery. And then it says, in the end, it says, you shall not procure an abortion, nor destroy a newborn child. In 170 AD, Mark Felix, a Christian lawyer, wrote, quote, there are some women among you who by drinking special potions extinguish the life of the future human in their very bowels, thus committing murder before they even give birth. Wow. End quote. Another early church leader wrote this, quote, "Christians marry like everyone else, and they begat children, but they do not cast out their offspring," end quote. You know, you say, well, Jeff, these people that are getting abortions, they're not like, you know, evangelical Christians and stuff. I mean, why even say that? Well, it's to prove the point, not only that abortion was practiced in the ancient world, but that as Christianity came along, we opposed it from the very beginning. Because we, you know, it's not a really tough subject here to understand. I mean, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, boy meant boy and girl meant girl. And now all of a sudden, somebody has a new idea and they think you could be anything you want to. Well, you just can't make up reality. And for thousands and thousands of years, those who believed in Yahweh knew that life was life in the womb. Now, some people will still argue for the legal right to abort babies. And they don't just do it. They don't just say, well, just because we should. They actually do have reasons, okay? So what are some of the reasons that women rationalize this whole practice for abortion? Why do they say they have a right to choose? Now, Planned Parenthood claims this, that 3 out of 10 women in the United States will have an abortion by the time they're 45 years old. I don't know if that's true or not. According to research, half of all women in the United States will have an abortion in their lifetime. But why? What reasons do they give? I'm going to give you the reasons that they give, and then the percentages of women who say this is the reason why they have abortions. Number one, I'm not ready to become a parent yet. 21% say that. Another 21% say, well, I can't afford a baby. 1.5% say, well, I'm being pressured by my parents, my partner, or my husband to get an abortion. Very, very small percentage. 12% say, I don't want to be a single parent. Because, you know, they've got their career and stuff, right? 1% say, I don't want anyone to know I've had sex or that I'm pregnant. 19% say, I already have too many children. 6% say, I have or the fetus has a health problem. 1% say, I was a victim of rape or incest. 16% say, I'm concerned about having a baby and how it'll change my life and future plans. And then 1.5% is just all the other reasons that they give. So at the heart of the question, so they do have reasons, okay? The question is, are any of those reasons justifiable to end the life of a newborn? At the heart of the abortion argument is a fundamental question. I think it's really a forgotten question, to be honest. But here's the question. This really solves everything if you answer this question. Is that unborn baby human simply a potential human or an actual one? A potential one or an actual one? Is it life or is it not life? That's the real question. Failed presidential candidate Hillary Clinton famously doubled down on her assertion that the unborn person has no constitutional rights and therefore no fundamental right to live. Good thing her mother didn't think that, right? Her argument angered both sides of the abortion debate, while effectively declaring all unborn children as somehow subhuman. Abortion rights activists were outraged that she even used the word person, which is a term that legally equates to certain protections and inalienable rights. Should have used fetus, they say. So here's the final question here. What are the arguments, I'm talking about the real arguments, that pro-abortion advocates use to justify the legality of abortion, the right to abortion, and the practice to abortion? I want to share with you 12 arguments that you might have trouble answering unless you listen to this podcast. And I want to give you these 12 arguments in the next Vintage Truth podcast. So you want to make sure you listen to that. 12 arguments for abortion and how to answer them. That's what we'll talk about. By the way, all of this that I'm telling you is found in my book, The End of America? Bible Prophecy and a Country in Crisis. And my brothers and sisters, we are in crisis It is time we understand these issues so that we can help people overcome them. I'll see you next time with the Vintage Truth Podcast. We'll talk about these 12 powerful arguments and what to say in response to them. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Vintage Truth Podcast. Please subscribe and share with a friend. For more about Jeff's ministry, go to jeffkinley.com.